Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. After a 24-year career in the state Senate, Middleton area Democrat John Erpenbach is leaving the Wisconsin legislature. A tireless champion for affordable, accessible health care and leading proponent of no-call list legislation, he's also known for a three-week trip to Illinois during the Act 10 collective bargaining debate, as well as flirting with a run for governor every once in a while. He's joining us right now, Senator John Erpenbach.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So, I've heard you say this is the best job. You love your
job.
Yes. Yeah. So, why are you leaving? Why now?
Well, 24 years, it's a long time. And there are people who I greatly admire, not only in politics, but just somebody who's working a factory floor and does it for 35 or 40 years, sticking to the job and not thinking in the back of their mind, you know, maybe I want to do something different. Maybe they did and didn't do anything about it. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But, you know, 24 years in the state Senate, and I think 8 or 9 years on staff before that, I've got to do something different. I love the job. Love the people I work with on both sides of the aisle. You know, most of them.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, but it's definitely time to move on.
So you and I were talking before the interview about kind of a little bit of what happened before you got into the legislature. Mm-hmm. What was your path to the legislature? Did you go to school for political science?
Actually, yeah, I did for like 20 minutes. I went to Oshkosh. And I think I was kicked out in about a year and a half. See, here's the deal, Lisa. I got a job at the student union right away. So I had money.
Okay.
And I think my first class was like at 9 or 10 in the morning. I didn't make it to the class that often. And eventually the counselor I was working with called me in and sat me down and said, John, you know, you probably really want to think about what you want to do. And I told him I'm doing what I want to do right now. And he kind of laughed and he said, that's great, but you just can't do it here anymore.
A professional college student.
You're right, right. Right. Mm-hmm. I would have been one of those, maybe take a year off or just go to, we have a great technical school system, go there and try and figure it out. But the classes that I did like on campus were political science related classes. And my mom and dad were on various times on the Middleton City Council. So I remember growing up and watching them occasionally in council meetings. So that's kind of how I got into it.
So politics was always kind of part of your life, a little bit of an interest, and then you
yeah.
stepped right into it 24 years ago. You know, I've heard you say that your favorite piece of legislation actually is one that you introduced almost 24 years ago when you were a freshman senator. Uh-huh. Is that no-call list?
Right.
What makes that your favorite over your entire career?
The way it happened. The fact that it wasn't my idea, I had nothing to do with it. So legislators, we do listening sessions all over. And I was doing one at the Middleton Senior Center, I don't know, probably within the first couple of months of being elected. So this would have been February, March, April, somewhere in there. And since it's at the Senior Center, a lot of senior citizens from Middleton showed up. And somebody before the meeting really got started talked about a telemarketing call they got the night before. And then next thing you know, for the next hour, everybody's talking about telemarketing calls. And somebody said there should be a list. And I think Alice Clausing, who was in the state Senate, started to work on it, but didn't get too far with it. And so once I introduced it, and it seemed to get more press than when Alice was working on it, and it became a very, very popular thing. And it actually passed as an amendment in the budget, which I don't think it should have, but, you know, whatever. That was back in the day where, you know, senators would get bridges and they would have to find a river to put the bridge over. So it was one of those kind of things. And so that's how it became law, but that's how it actually happened. Middleton seniors just, and senior citizens all over the state, were just nonstop talking about the telemarketing calls, and they hated them. So that's how that happened.
So constituents really
yeah.
informing legislation. Have you tried to kind of stick with that model during your time in office?
Yeah, then? Yeah. You know, my favorite is when somebody comes up to me and says, look, I didn't vote for you, but. And the I didn't vote for you doesn't matter. I mean, the fact is, I won, first of all. Secondly, it doesn't matter if you did or didn't vote for me. You're a constituent I represent. And so some of the best ideas for legislation, Gary Stork, medical marijuana, something I've been working on forever and haven't gotten past yet, but that came from Gary, constituent at the time. So constituents, whether they agree or disagree with you, sometimes have some really good ideas for legislation.
So with 24 years in the state legislature, you can kind of look back at how times have changed, has it become much harder to be a Democrat in the legislature over the last several years?
If you're really into winning, yeah, it is. But the job, first and foremost, is to serve your Senate district. And I love doing that. There's people from one end to the other, whether they are locally elected officials or people I've just met along the way that I absolutely love and I'm going to miss working with. The frustrating part about all of this stuff is redistricting is kind of like we have glass walls up around each Senate district. And we can see other people, and we can tell they're talking or yelling, and they can see us, and they can tell we're talking and yelling, but nobody can hear each other. Everybody is trying to yell over everybody. And that's really all a result of redistricting, because Democratic districts got more Democratic, Republican districts got more Republican, and then more of them. And so as a result of that, you usually get some of the more extremes coming out of the primaries. You get really far-right conservatives, you'll get far-left liberals, and as a result of that, the legislation we've seen over the years, it's not so much that the debate has changed, it's just that the legislation has changed pretty dramatically, where Republicans used to work with Democrats or Democrats used to work with Republicans. When somebody introduced a pretty extreme piece of legislation, maybe watered it down or whatever the case may be, that doesn't happen now. And the legislation has really changed. And to me, that's more of a frustrating thing, simply because we are a very purple state. You know, you don't represent the 20,000 people who got you through a primary vote, a close primary. You represent your entire district. And yep, even in Waukesha County, there are a lot of Democrats. And there's Democrats up in the Fox Valley. There's Democrats in rural Wisconsin. And the idea that a legislator isn't going to listen to one side or the other because they don't have to is probably a pretty good indicator that they shouldn't be there in the first place.
So we've lost the ability to compromise, to find that middle ground.
Yeah, and it's not so much compromise is the right word, but there's a better word. I don't know what it is, but the idea is you're taking a piece of legislation. It's not so much you're compromising, you're making it better to fit the state. Because if I pass a law, it's not just a law in the 27th Senate District, it's a law in the entire state. And legislators need to, you need to keep that in mind. I don't represent Superior. I don't represent Bayfield. I don't represent Kenosha or Racine, you know, or down by Platteville or wherever. I don't, but I have an impact with a vote, first of all. And secondly, if it's my legislation, it has to fit the state, and it has to be workable in the state. And if it's not, then I've got the problem. And you don't go full steam ahead on something that isn't workable for the entire state.
You mentioned redistricting. The maps are being redrawn now. Do you see any possibility that that changes the nature of the legislature and the discussion in the legislature changes?
Well, theoretically, it could. In reality, it probably won't, because, you know, in my opinion, the Supreme Court's pretty stacked right now. And that's another thing that's probably changed the most in my 24 years is the partisanship of the Supreme Court. That's what I've noticed the most. That aside, redistricting, first of all, it's, and I've said this forever, Lisa, it's the most selfish thing legislators do. You know, we are choosing our constituents. Democrats did it when they had the majority. Republicans are doing it now. And it shouldn't be that way. It should be, whether it's a panel of three judges or the Legislative Reference Bureau, it should be some entity that has nothing to do with the legislature, and basically draw the map and say, here you go. And that's the way it should be. Iowa does it that way. You know, the legislature still has input in Iowa, but they have a very clean way of dealing with redistricting, and it would be great if we ever got to that point in this state, which I believe we will someday, but just not right now.
You have been a tireless advocate, as I mentioned in the introduction, for affordable, accessible health care. Mm-hmm. I know you've introduced legislation to expand Medicaid in Wisconsin several times. And as recently as just a few weeks ago, standing in the Healthcare Heroes Act introduction includes Medicaid expansion. It's failed every time. Republicans have pretty much said, over my dead body.
Yeah.
Why keep trying?
Well, two reasons. Well, more than two. First of all, it's the right thing to do. I mean, if somebody's making more, actually, it's a little less than minimum wage. If you make more than minimum wage, you do not qualify for Badger Care. It's ridiculous, first of all, just ridiculous. Now, there's not a lot of people making minimum wage, but there are some. And there's not a lot of people making $8 or $9 an hour. Now, not a lot, but there are more than people making $7.50 an hour. So here's the deal with Medicaid. People, the Republicans were successful in basically saying it's a welfare program. It's not. It's healthcare, which I think is a fundamental right. Everybody should have access to it. And, you know, legislators who vote no, the taxpayers are paying for their own health care. The taxpayers are paying for the legislators' health care. Yet the legislators are saying, sorry, at $8.50 an hour, you make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. You know, so that's always been really frustrating. And the idea that they sit there and I pay $120 a month, $150 a month for my health care. I've got great health care thanks to the taxpayers of Wisconsin, thanks to somebody making $8.50 an hour who pays taxes. You know, that person helps underwrite the cost of my health care. So they should have access to good quality, affordable health care. And I think if we would have gotten that right years, decades ago, economically, not only I think would our businesses and especially our small businesses be in better position today, but overall we would be healthier. We being the 5.5 million people who live in this state, we'd be healthier. And so just because I'm leaving doesn't mean it's going to stop. And I'm sure I'm going to have plenty more opportunities to try and at least throw an amendment out there on Medicaid expansion or whatever. I might even do it this Sunday, just sitting at home, you know, announcing I want to expand Medicaid. I don't know. But the thing is, so when you talk to people, and it doesn't matter if you're at a supper club or out at a fish fry or you're shopping or whatever, and you talk to people who are adamantly opposed to Medicaid expansion, and then you say why you're doing it and how much an individual, if they're over a certain threshold in dollars, don't qualify for Badger Care, they're shocked at how low that actual wage is. So, you know, Democrats will keep pushing forward. You know, there are moderate Republicans who I think would support it. If it ever actually got to the vote, not in a procedural motion, but an actual vote on it, I wouldn't be surprised if it passes. I just wouldn't.
Interesting. So you'll keep trying on that. I know you're not slowing down. I mentioned a few weeks ago you introduced the Healthcare Heroes Act with a group of Democrats, and that would provide paid leave and other benefits to healthcare workers. It includes Medicaid expansion. What else can we expect from you in your final year in office? What are your priorities?
All right, so I'm working on a bill, but I'm not the lead author on it. Jerry Petruski is, because he chairs the Transportation Committee, and this is where the bill goes through. Now, I'll bet you any money, not a lot of money, but that most
you're going to be unemployed soon.
Well, I'm going to work. I'm going to just do something different.
Okay.
So most of your viewers, and I would think most of Wisconsin, does not know that the tag on your license plate, mine expires in May of, I think, 2022. It's a specific day in May. It's not the end of the month. I always thought it was the end of the month. And I didn't know that until I got pulled over because my registration had expired on the plates. And I said, no, it was May. It was like May, whatever, 18th, 19th, somewhere in there. I said, no, I've got to the end of the month. He goes, no, sir, it expired on May 5th, whatever. I didn't know that. So theoretically, people can get ticketed for that. And that's just dumb. So the idea of this legislation is that your registration fee will be due at the end of every month, not a specific date, but at the end of every month. This is going to make Wisconsin such a better place to live. I'm just kidding. Anyway, no, the idea behind it is the fact that I don't want somebody getting a ticket because their registration expired during the middle of the month when they think, wait a minute, it's at the end of the month. So that's why. That's what that's all about. And so I'll be working on that.
That's a number one priority.
Well, that and Medicaid expansion. We'll have a Medicaid expansion upper in there. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm working with Democrats and Republicans on this, and hopefully we'll get it to the governor's desk, and it'll be nice bipartisan. And handing out of ceremonial pens and
a last hurrah.
Yeah, that'll be it. So
nice. So of course we can't do an exit interview without talking about Act 10.
Mm-hmm.
You were one of 14 Senate Democrats who left Wisconsin during that time in a failed attempt to block Governor Walker's then proposed collective bargaining law.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember most about that time?
Illinois in February is really not a hot spot for vacations. It was cold, you know, and people thought we just didn't want to work. And we were actually working every day down there. And it didn't matter if it was like Tim Cullen reaching out to Republicans to try and figure this out, or Kathleen Beinhout also doing the same thing, Bob Jelk doing the same thing. Here's the deal with Act 10. It was always going to happen. It was always going to happen. The idea was to make sure that if it was going to happen, first of all, that people knew what this meant. But secondly, let's step back, because Scott Walker wanted it done in about a week. And the ramifications, and it wasn't just Act 10. There was other stuff in that budget repair bill that were not good. People needed to understand what this meant. And people needed to understand the economic hit it would be to state employees, and people need to understand that state employees were already paying for their health care. When the governor was saying they don't pay for their health care, that was a lie. They pay for their health care. And every time they sit down and negotiate with previous governors, health care costs go up X amount of dollars, so the public employees usually say, okay, we will not take as big of a raise as we wanted. So they're paying for their health care. And so when Scott Walker decided to say that your neighbor, the teacher, doesn't pay for health care, but you do, that's not fair. The idea isn't to take it away from the teacher. The idea is to figure out how to make the neighbor have access to affordable health care that they can afford. It's the same thing with a pension. You know, the idea that your neighbor, the teacher, has, you know, a publicly funded pension, well, that they were paying into it as well. But the idea that they have it and you don't take it away from them. Try and figure out how you can make people's lives, give them access to a pension, for example. So the idea of the conquer and divide, and he said it out loud, was just wrong, first of all. And then secondly, what a lot of people don't know is governors get most of what they want. And this was going to happen. And it wasn't going to happen because there were Republicans and that controlled the legislature and Republican governor. Even in a situation where Republicans control one thing and a Democrat controls another thing, whether it's the legislature or the governor, governors usually get what they want. So the idea was to slow it down, see if we could reach out, work with the Republicans, try and come to an agreement on some of the aspects of collective bargaining, some of the aspects of other things within Act 10. And after about 2 weeks or so, it was pretty clear that that was going to happen. So we decided to stay down there because we knew the Republicans were going to try and short-circuit the process, which they did, and they won in court over it. But so long story short, if I had to do it again, I'd go to Maui. I wouldn't go to Illinois, especially if it's in February. But it was too far. Maui was too far. But the thing, and the other thing, too, on the recall, as long as you brought up Act 10, that, you know, I voted to, and I signed the petition, to recall the governor. Governor didn't necessarily break the law. And usually that's what recalls are all about, if somebody breaks the law. But the passion behind Act 10 and other things within Act 10, I could understand why the recall happened. We can agree or disagree whether it should have until the cows come home. But the fact of the matter is it was going to happen. So it happened. He won. And then I think another mistake that the governor made after that was he used that petition as a list, that if you sign the petition, there's no room for you, not only in my administration, but on most of the boards that I appoint. You know, there was a kid who was appointed to be the student board of regents, and he signed the petition, I think because his mom was a teacher. Governor appointed him. It came to light that he signed the petition. Governor rescinded the appointment. It's like, that's to a college kid. And it's like, that's not being gubernatorial, you know? So
you know, it sounds like this was maybe the most significant piece during your time in office, would you say, the whole Act 10 and the recall? Do you look back as that's a significant memory?
Yeah, probably the most. Certainly the most. Certainly, at least for not so much necessarily me personally, but for the state in my 24 years, that was it's not a turning point. It's not a tipping point. It could be a tipping point to where we are today, but it's really more a matter of the significance, not only that it had on politics, but that it had on the average family in this state, you know, I mean, and that it had on local, you know, corner bars that do fish fries, because they felt the impact too, because union members didn't necessarily have as much money to go out anymore. I mean, there's all of that.
Right.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was pretty significant.
We have a clip of you from that time. You got a little national notoriety during mm-hmm. that time. We are going to watch a clip from Comedy Central with Stephen Colbert.
Please welcome Wisconsin Democratic Senator John Erpenbach.
Thank you, Stephen. Nice to be here.
Now, sir, I know you are from an undisclosed location. Where are you exactly?
In Chicago.
Okay, don't tell me where you are. Because if you tell me where you are, it's no longer an undisclosed location, and it'd make this far less interesting of a story, okay? So let's try that again. Sir,
all right.
Sir, where are you?
I can't tell you.
That's much better. Okay. That's much better.
So one thing that people talk about when they talk about you is your sense of humor, which we saw in that clip there. You've been known to be the one who maybe cracks a joke, a wise comment in the Joint Finance Committee budget deliberations when it's an otherwise heated moment. Why has it been important to maintain a sense of humor during your time?
Okay, how long have you been knocking around the Capitol? For a little while.
Oh, right.
Right, in various professions. You sat through committee hearings. You know how boring they are. You know how they can just droll on. At the same time, when you can see that a couple of your colleagues are really starting to go at each other, and they're not that far apart on things at times, but they start to go at each other occasionally, once in a while, it might be good to say something. Other times it's very difficult not to say something, and it gets out there before you get a chance to, it gets through my filter, in other words. So
some jokes have gone better than others.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, but the idea of, and I think I've always had it, and I'll tell you a really quick high school story. So Mr. Austad was my biology teacher, and I got an answer wrong on a test, and the question was, why can birds fly? And I said, it's because they have wings. And it was wrong because they can fly because their bones are hollow. Because if their bones weren't hollow, they'd be too heavy to fly. That's what he told me. So I told him, okay, that's fine. If they don't have wings, all they can do is hop really high. So technically, they can't fly without wings either. So I got half right, which didn't do much for my grade. But the whole idea is birds can fly because they have wings. Well, yeah, okay. So the idea that you're sitting in a committee hearing and the former state senator Rod Bowen, who had like TV anchor hair, I don't know if you've ever remember, his hair was perfect. I'm just absolutely perfect, always perfect. And there was somebody on his health committee who was testifying to become a member of the Barbering and Cosmetology Board. And yes, there really is one. So he asked, does anybody have any questions? And I said, yes, one question. And Senator Mullen said, what's your question? I said, is the chairman wearing a toupee? Because his hair was that perfect. And she said, no, he's not. And she got it right, so I voted for her.
thanks for bringing that back around for us. So,
you probably sit there going, oh my God, where is this going?
Now I know what UW Oshkosh was thinking.
Yeah.
One big shift during your tenure in office, 2008, President Obama is elected. We have a Democratic governor, Democratic state legislature, and shortly thereafter, Senator Ron Johnson gets elected. Mm-hmm. The governor is now Scott Walker, Republican state legislature. Did you see that shift coming?
When I talked about Act 10, wasn't a tipping point, but it was probably a starting point. And I think where we are today politically, you could see it coming through Act 10. You had family members who couldn't talk to each other about Act 10. You had friends who are no longer friends because of Act 10. And you see the same thing with former President Trump. There are people who can't talk about it because if they did, it would get really ugly. So back Act 10, was it 12 years ago or 11, whenever it was, I could kind of sense the fact that there is definitely a shift, and the shift's going to be more of a division because you were either for Scott Walker or you hated Scott Walker, loved him, hate him. There was no in between. And so that's kind of when I saw that coming. I am not surprised we are where we are today because of the verbiage you hear from leaders of not only our country but our state. If the tone isn't set from the top, or the tone is set and it's bad, it gives permission to other people to say whatever it is they want to say without understanding or having any compassion or anything about who they're talking to. So the tone of the debate's always set at the top. And when President Trump used the tone he used, it was disgusting. When I see some of my colleagues say some of the things they say, it's disgusting. It's not their way or no way. I mean, my God, there's 5.5 million people who live in the state, and you have to account for that. And whether you want to or not, you have to listen to that, and you have to work with people on that. So Act 10, at least in this state, that's where it started. I know that nationally, the eyes were on Wisconsin for about 3.5 weeks, and then after, throughout the recall. And I think there are some legislators around the country who saw an opportunity to either make a name for themselves or get more of an in with particular groups or so on. But that's, I think that's kind of where it started.
Sure. Do you have any regrets other than Medicaid expansion not passing?
No. I don't. I mean, Medicaid expansion would have been great. But no, there weren't any regrets. I mean, I made mistakes along the way, just like everybody else does in their jobs. But if I stopped listening to people, if I actually believed I was state senator meant something more than what it actually means, which is, you know, you got telemarketers and you got politicians. I mean, there's not a lot of room in between. And I understood what people thought about politicians. I understand what people think about Madison when they use it in terms that are not flattering. But if I stopped listening, if I started to believe that the job was something more than it actually is, then I'd be sitting here probably having some regrets. But overall, I don't, because I always listened, would try and explain myself, try and explain what Democrats were doing, or to Democrats try and explain what Republicans were doing. So I never stopped listening. So no regrets.
What will you miss most?
Well, I've told other reporters my parking spot, which, because it's really
pretty sweet.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to miss the people around the district. I'm going to miss some people in the building. But people around the district that I got to know, that worked with me on legislation throughout the case. And I met some wonderful people around the state, because I spent a lot of time going around the state, especially after Act 10, and giving a lot of speeches, talking to groups and answering their questions. So and it's not like the people are going to go away. They're going to be there. But working with them or talking with them at this level, that's what I'll miss most.
Any friends across the aisle or any room for bipartisan relationships on the other side?
Right now?
After you leave.
Yeah. I mean, you mean with me or with the ones who are still there?
For you, yes, for you to reach out and...
Yeah, I mean, I got, believe it or not, one of my better friend people, when I tell them this, go, what? One of my better friends in the Senate in my career on the Republican side, Scott Fitzgerald. We got along great. I get along with Alberta, darling, just fine. I get along with most of them fine, the ones I know. I mean, there are new ones that I haven't taken the time to get to know. But the ones that I do know and I have worked with over the years, it's been really good. But moving forward, you know, once I'm out of here, I'm sure I'll see some of them along the way. But some of my really good friends around the other side of the aisle, I had some great friends who were Democrats here who I worked with, who helped get me elected. After they were out of here, that I will always cherish. But yeah, I mean, people are surprised when I say Scott and I were pretty good friends.
Mm-hmm. As I said in the opening, you have flirted with a run for governor, mm-hmm. sometimes thinking about putting your hat in the ring. I know you haven't said what you plan to do in the future. You haven't ruled out public office mm-hmm. again. Would we ever potentially see your name up for governor in the future?
I don't know. I think when you say no, never, that's a mistake, because you can't necessarily go back on your word, even though some politicians do, because everybody tells them they should do it, which I find really hard to believe. But I don't know. Governor, I don't know. I mean, there are all sorts of opportunities down the road. If this is something I would still like to do and the support is still there, then perhaps. I think right now it would be really cool just to not do that. And just step back, and I'll do something. It'd be fun to get back into radio. It would be fun to do my part-time jobs that I do right now, which are great, which I love, but I don't know. And one of the advantages that I do have is that I made the announcement when I made it for two reasons. First of all, to give anybody who wants to run for this seat time to get a campaign together, because even at the state level, which you might not think is a big deal, you've got to raise money, you're going to have a campaign staff, you got to raise a lot of money, you have to get out and meet the people in the district, so you need time. So the idea is to give people enough time to think about it and then do it or not do it. And then secondly, to give me a little bit of time to think, okay, you know, I have a little less than a year left on my job, I love it, I'm still going to go out and listen and be in the district and still show up for committee hearings and do all that stuff, but it also gives me time to try and figure out what I want to do this time next year.
You could go back to school.
I could go back to school. All right. So speaking of going back to school, I don't know how much time we have. This will be really, really quick.
Okay. All right.
Really, really quick. So Oshkosh told me to leave. And so when I got elected, I thought, okay, I can take a couple of classes here and there and finish up my degree. So I called Oshkosh for my transcripts, and they wouldn't give it to me because they said I owed them $9 in library fines. Library fines. I said, you have my grades right there. You see them, right? She goes, yes. And I said, there's no way in the world I ever went to the library, let alone walked past the library, let alone checked out a library book. So I still think Oshkosh got the library fines thing wrong, because I don't ever remember going to the library.
Well, maybe you'll have some
anything out,
time
so.
To resolve that now in your free time.
So. Well, I'm going to call my new state senator and say, hey, I got a problem with Oshkosh. Yeah.
Well, it's been a really nice conversation today.
All right, Lisa.
Thank you for giving us a preview into what we might expect in the future. And good luck in your final year.
Thanks.
Okay. And thank you to our viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make an impact on our state and all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.